Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And good afternoon, guys. Specifically here on what is April Fool's. Even though the 1st of April didn't actually start with April Fool's, but it really started with a surreal and very tense, laden morning and session, even obviously leading in from last night, the 31st of March. Guys, to be all in all honesty, welcoming you once again to the Home Run, but in all honesty, the debacle of yesterday of the service stations, I really thought that such comical behavior in terms of economic sabotage, in a way, would really not happen. I really thought Namibians were not that, would not act that low. And it did happen. It did happen. Guys, this morning was a headache looking for petrol. And obviously, that is not an April Fool's that you would love to wish even on your enemy, because that was just another low. But yeah, we get through it. Obviously, it seems that things have subsided. I mean, obviously, in the capital, wherever you find yourself, the scenario could be different. The scenario could be completely or still a very deprived, a massively deprived scenario in terms of or expecting or waiting for the fuel supply at your local fuel station. But it seems calm has been restored. It seems. Now, obviously, we thought that, you know, the particular Iran conflict, somehow would not reach our shores, even with the statement that the ministry gave back on Friday, highlighting the sufficient fuel supply in the national storage, as well as also that there is adequate supply left in the country to sort of like allay any fears. Well, not allay, that's not the right word, but sort of like stem any fears that people would have. And the fears manifested not because of a boat not showing up, not because of a price being shoved onto Namibia as a country who's buying their own particular fuel supply. No, this technically was a discussion that the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy has brought to our attention, primarily that the private sector held specifically the Namibian economy hostage. Straightforward, guys. We've got to be honest about this. It's a straightforward scenario. For today's, obviously for today's session, we've lined up and, don't worry. If you're wondering what has happened to Helmut, whether or not I've somehow kicked Helmut out from the Home Run session, he'll be here just a little bit shortly, in terms of the, just in terms of a prior engagement. But our talk for today that we've got lined up is based upon intellectual property, and specifically this coincides with the article we've got in today's The Villager e-paper platform, specifically about the recommendations and the specific inputs that I observed just for one day, because I couldn't come back to the other 3 days primarily because of other work commitments. You can't go back to the same event every day. Regarding the development of the national intellectual property policy and strategy for Namibia, but this being the second strategy that is to be developed. Now, said development exercise obviously took place last week, just so that you know. So between Wednesday to Friday, this particular activity took place. Who was spearheading it? It was primarily BIPA. BIPA invited also the World Intellectual Property Organization's Africa representatives. Two people to come and also observe, as well as also give their particular inputs and guidance specifically to where this strategy has to go to and what it has to achieve. The interesting thing that obviously pops up from this is that, and I have to concede, It's only last week that I heard that Namibia actually had an intellectual property policy and strategy, document. I can't remember from my memory banks when I went to a previous intellectual property engagement that was hosted by the NCRST. I could not remember an engagement, the engagement of last year specifically regarding intellectual property, whether they spoke of the NIPPS, that is the acronym used for this intellectual property strategy and policy that Namibia uses. Its name is NIPS, NIPPS. If your mind is in the gutter somewhere, guys, that's up to you. That was not my intent. That's literally the acronym that was decided upon by the powers that be. We obviously see that, it was a policy, the first policy or the first time frame policy and strategy was meant to run from 2019 to 2024. However, it was impacted by COVID and it could only run for 3 years. It technically kicked off from the engagement that I observed is that it kicked off actually only from 2022 in that regard. 2022, 2023, 2024. 2019 was sort of like the year that it was partially in development and partially being introduced, which also makes things a little bit, peculiar, because you ask a question of, in terms of, if you're going to bring out a strategy, why are you incorporating the year that you are literally developing said particular strategy? And why are we introducing it a little, why are we including that year that it's literally being developed as part of the strategy implementation phase? But it's not a train smash, because in many scenarios, I got the chance to hear of interesting legislation. Now, we have to also understand that there are benefits regarding the intellectual property protections that we needed, and that we are still stuck on a particular plane. And I say a plane, I mean actually on a specific platform where you see we've got a backlog of bills that literally are in the pipeline. Now, if you take a breath, we mentioned the discussion of bills yesterday once again. And I highlighted in our discussion yesterday, which was based upon the investment guides that the Namibia Investment Promotion Development Board had introduced and had developed. These were the first four volumes. Three more was supposed to also be added onto the initial four. The initial four were the ones that were unveiled and obviously launched. They included the how to do business, the banking regulation in Namibia, and the country profile and the investment opportunities in the country that were there. So those were the first four volumes. Now, if you take a look, if you put that discussion of yesterday next to the discussion of today regarding intellectual property is supposed to play a two-way street. Technically, it's supposed to be the referee between local investors and business people and international investors and business people. Reason being why I highlight this is it has an interesting sort of like not a push and pull factor, but it's almost like an elastic band, those elastic bands that we used to use in basic office stationary scenarios. You get an elastic band and you put it around your envelopes. When you look at the elasticity of an elastic band, the warmer it gets, the further the stretch could get. But the colder it sometimes gets, the tighter the elasticity or the potential for elasticity that the elastic band could stretch on. Now, when we look at how the intellectual property landscape in Namibia currently views itself, is that there's a whole bunch of legislation that once again needs amendments, and a whole bunch that are in the pipeline in terms of being in a draft or in a bill phase being introduced to the National Assembly platform. Now, remember, put yesterday's conversation of investment guides and guiding investment in Namibia, put it as sort of like a precursor, an introduction discussion to looking at how intellectual property is this unlocked particular, for a better word, opportunity. Now, things can only get interesting from here. Reason being, because there's a very nice thing that the consultants that were hired to look at the legal framework and various other particular situational analyses or analysis within the country and its particular landscape regarding intellectual property, from laws to policies to things that can be enacted to function. I want to bring in a interesting sort of like subject matter. So there is a particular piece of legislation that we've had. And I just want to cite this particular thing because the consultant that presented, his name is Tom Peter Migun Ogada, who's from Kenya, and he worked with three local consultants, that being a Lenikela Ihua, a Selma Fortunato, and a Kula Simpson. Now, Ogada and his team of consultants primarily had to look at things of the legal framework, as I mentioned, and also how rights are produced when you, as the producer, that's now the local Namibian, produces a piece of intellectual property, which also can include a copyright-protected work, a potentially copyright-protected work, and how the commercialization can obviously be derived from there. And obvious enforcement, meaning protection to you and your rights and your claims to any format of compensation, you know, if someone inadvertently, or not inadvertently, because it can also happen deliberately, when someone uses your work without you being, you know, properly being compensated for. Now, I've heard, because I looked it up a little bit, that Namibian artists did not like the $2 Namibian levy, meaning every time when a local Namibian song is played on a radio station's broadcasts, that it's $2 per time that the song is played by radio personalities, radio journalists, or even radio DJs in that scenario. Now, this makes things interesting because enforcement is another subject matter. You see, you can write someone an invoice, and that person, in some cases, in such a scenario, can decide whether or not they want to actually honor said invoice. Because you then also have to prove when did they play what song by which artist at which time slot on which date and how often did that song play. It's always a fascinating piece of technicality to consider because for you guys that remember buying CDs, if you guys remember buying CDs, I always used to read CDs, you know, the fine print on CDs at the back. There was always this massive disclaimer. And okay, it's not massive because it's like the fine print. Primarily because the fine print is a scenario that you miss it a lot. You don't read it, and then you go blast it at a party or somewhere, or you you rip the CD, and you have it now in MP3 format on your PC or laptop or on a memory stick, and you go blast it at a party once again or in a club. Now, if you guys never read the fine print on CD covers, and I'm literally talking about CD covers coming from the big record labels. I'm talking about what was the record label that Coldplay started off with? I think it was EMI. They started off with Parlophone. Then they moved over to Warner Music Group. Then they moved over to Universal Music Group. Then Atlantic Records, Capitol Records, and EMI. Now it's, yeah, there's like 12 record labels that Coldplay, the band, the British band, Coldplay, had been contracted to. Now, when you obviously look at the record labels like, of this magnitude, they act as representatives of the intellectual property and the copyright protected material of the Coldplay band. This is not an industry body. Like in many cases, Namibians have also highlighted this discussion before, because in the second strategy development for Namibia's intellectual property policy and strategy, the second NIPS, which was the event of last week, where they were busy developing the second NIPS, was a scenario where all the keynote speakers kept referencing NASCAM, and they kept referencing various authorities in the country who should be potentially reinforced in order to deliver enforcement in one way or another. But in actual fact, guys, the biggest protections I've ever seen in the world have come through from direct commercial to commercial challenges. I'll say it again. The biggest protections have been direct commercial conflict between two privately commercial entities, i.e. being, let's for example say, the much more famous talking point that I want to bring up for you was in recent back in 2024, I think, the video game, let me rather say the electronic entertainment company Valve, which is Valve Corporation, they own the world's, let me rather say, foremost sort of like commercial portal. It's known as Steam. Steam is, and if you go search it up, you've got the Steam store, and Steam's particular role is sort of like aggregating all the creative work, which is video games, and its associated creatives, creative content, which is songs, art styles, and the actual video game itself. They aggregate it, and they are this massive digital commercial portal, meaning you can buy a video game through Steam, enjoy discounts at various seasonal scenarios, and also have the opportunity of developing a library of these creative works for yourself. However, it does not mean that an entity as massive as Steam, which is owned by the Valve Corporation, is immune to any particular sort of like intellectual property or even copyright legal challenges that can come about. Why do I say this? Back in last month, news came out of a particular legal challenge that Steam had with something. It's usually known as copyright? They call these kinds of entities or people that maliciously, continuously sue you for the same thing, but they sue you under their mother's name, or they sue you under their father's name, or they sue you under their sister's name and brother's name. And I'm just showing you the various aliases that they sometimes try to sue the same single party in a related scenario. So Steam was sued 3 weeks back, but it's actually a court case that came a little bit longer beforehand, because back in 2016 or 2018, this was not the first time that Steam actually dealt with the same sort of like commercially related entities by this one business person. So Steam was sued by the Performing Rights Society for, this was recently, Performing Rights Society. This is another court case that they were sued on, but they were sued by another guy who had multiple companies, and he would take a legal challenge through one company for the same thing. And then Steam would say, and then Steam reminded him continuously about, hey, listen, we signed this agreement, this overarching agreement back in 2018 when we settled this first claim. And this first claim was based upon settling anything to do with the claims in future. So it was such a massive legal challenge that took place that they settled out of court. And Steam went and said, listen, we'll pay you we'll actually pay you and for this permission that you give to us forever, you know, for a lifetime. Now, in the United States, you can apparently sign such agreements. You can sign a infinity contract, meaning I ask for exclusive rights to use a certain particular commercial entity or a commercial specific characteristic or trait forever. So I buy the right to operate this particular thing forever from you. You can't make a claim for compensation or for remuneration or any kind of monetary claim against me in future. And it doesn't matter under what company you make this claim under. This absolves this offer that we're giving you in future forever. So I'm just summarizing what happened. So, the interesting thing that popped up from this was this guy who said yes back in 2018 came back in 2024 and tried to do the same thing. And Steam told his lawyers, hey, listen, you already signed this contract. Why do we have to remind you about this from 2018 in 2024? Then they said, okay, sorry. Then they came back again in 2025. And then Steam's lawyers went again, hey, listen, you are doing the same thing again, and we reminded you last time. And every time he's been filing legal challenges against Steam under different company names, meaning he's got these various shell companies where he's launching these legal challenges from. So it sounds wonderful for any lawyer listening out there. It sounds wonderful. But he was already paid a massive amount of money by Steam back in 2018. And said particular massive amount of money was something that was supposed to silence him, because he sold away any right and any claim of ever enjoying whatever he sued Steam for in the first place, which he also lost because they settled out of court. Now, the point of that whole sort of like presentation that I highlighted to you there by the Valve Corporation, and they call these people copyright trolls or intellectual property trolls. They call them those because the kinds of malicious, legal challenges that they continuously bring up. And sometimes you see it's a legal challenge they bring up that has no base, no merit, and it can immediately just be a judge doesn't even have to look at it, because they just have to stand there for 10 minutes and the judge would go like, but you already signed away, or you agreed to this contract. Why are you suing people under different names or different corporate entities? So yeah, so the interesting thing is that you see that in Namibia, we don't hear much about these kinds of legal challenges taking place regarding intellectual property and the likes, which is obviously something about how often do you see intellectual property legal challenges occur? And in many cases, the examples I've got have been private sector to private sector. We don't hear that much. Hey, Helmut.
Hey, Dwight. Hey, everyone.
You're not sweating yet, ne?
Thanks to the weather. Now, look, I have one question. A thousand apologies, guys. The roads and, and just everything is just crazy. Yeah. Whose brilliant idea was it to interconnect global economy like this? Because now we're here paying for Donald Trump's mistakes.
Technically, it was not Donald Trump's mistake, because Helmut, if the ministry says one thing on Friday in terms of reassuring that there's adequate supply for at least 2 months of fuel, both diesel and petrol, in the country. And then we get to Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And you start hearing reports about, guys, we're being shown away from service stations. So that means, Helmut, someone somewhere in the channel is playing, let's just hold back. Don't order anything yet. Just hold back. Now, my mom, before she passed away, obviously, told me back in 2014, 2013, what happened, when Iran in, I think it's 1979, the oil crisis of 1979, where Richard Nixon was literally forced to move away from the gold standard and that the US has to develop its own oil standard, yeah. Its own oil reserves.
AKA the...
It was Iran again when they stormed the embassy, remember, in Tehran.
Oh, 1979, the Iranian Revolution.
Yes. Yeah. So it literally led to an oil crisis for the West, just for the West.
I mean, if it was just for them, that would have been a brilliant idea.
Yeah, which included South Africa and Namibia at that stage.
Ah, boy. Because I understand the apartheid regime was very cozy with the US and Israel.
Yeah. So what happened?
Hang on a second. And Iran under the Shah. Yeah, they were, you know, very close.
They're very cozy.
Yeah, it wasn't until the Shah was overthrown. That's when you see a sort of like a flip relationship between Iran and South Africa. Yeah. Then you have the new government takes over. Then they start. More like siding with the ANC and instead of the then quote-unquote established government of the day.
Which is obviously also the same trend that Namibia has developed, because Namibia is also, you know, friendly with Iran. I mean, Iran tried selling us discounted steel. But yeah, my mom told us, because at that stage, I think my sister was born. The three elder siblings were already born. So they told us about the lines, the queues that happened there in the 70s. Namibians didn't have fuel. And this wasn't the game of we're waiting for the price increase at 12 at midnight.
Yeah.
No, there was actual fuel rationing in the 70s. It's 1979.
Okay, now I have, you know, just a one.
But there were two. Uh-huh. There were two Iran-induced fuel crises in the 70s. It's that 1979, and there was a second or a first one earlier before that. And literally, it happened in the 80s again. Sorry, the second one was in the 80s. Once again, it was the Iran-Iraq war when the Americans and the British decided to support Saddam Hussein against the Iranians. Iran, yeah. And that war was, I think, a 6 or 7 year war. So then Iran decided, okay, we shall withhold oil supply to the world because you guys are supporting the Iraqis. Mm-hmm. Saddam also couldn't export his oil because he literally has to sail right past Iran.
The Strait.
Because that's the only shoreline, guys, that Iraq had. Literally in, what's that Gulf's name? With the Strait of Hormuz, that Gulf, that neighborhood that has Iran, Iraq, Syria.
You have Yemen is on the other side. The Saudis are sort of like caught somewhat in a somewhat in a crossfire.
Yeah,
yeah. You have
the Saudis have two shorelines.
Yeah, you have the Gulf of Aden is the side of Somalia.
Yeah,
that's the Gulf of what's this? The Persian Gulf.
Yeah. Exactly.
That which makes a lot of sense. You have the Persian Gulf, Persia, before they changed to Iran, by the way.
So
now, for a very long time, I thought the official language in Iran was Arabic.
Without knowing that they actually speak Farsi.
Exactly.
Yeah. Farsi is apparently the other name for Persian. That the ancient Greeks spoke about, and that obviously, you know, the later on Europeans who tried to be romantic like the Greeks tried to explore the rest of the world, and they called it Persian until the actual Persians had to tell them the language's name is Farsi. It's because they speak two, there are two major language groups in Iran. It's Farsi and there's another one. And then everyone was like, oh, okay. Okay. Awesome. But yeah. So back on the intellectual
property.
Yeah. So, just before you walked in, Helmut, I was talking about Steam that was recently sued by a guy who was trying to be malicious. This was as Steam was being sued for it's not this particular legal claim. But so it was about Steam's actual function, you know, selling games through the Steam portal and the actual function. Now, this entity who also sued them recently, its name is Performing Rights Society. But this was about music, this specific claim once again. The other one was about a guy that was suing them because the whole function of their system, they had technically paid the person out. They settled out of court. Now, the particular, you know, point that I made was that the only time we hear about actual intellectual property or copyright challenges taking place or being taken to a court is when it's private sector to private sector. Someone is using the law to try and enforce a position and trying to achieve a monetary or compensatory level. You will never hear the government or a government agency taking a private sector, a private individual or a private commercial enterprise to court over a copyright infringement or over an intellectual property infringement in any manner. You will never hear it. You will never hear it.
Yeah, because for the most part, this actually most likely to be, I think this is something that's concentrated in civil disputes.
Which it is.
Yeah, it's like me sort of like duplicating your work, and then you basically approach the relevant legal authorities, which are the courts in this case, and then you just file all the relevant document that this and this work that is now being accredited to Helmut. I produced it first, and this is the proof that I have that that will show you that this is my original work.
Yeah.
And he just copied it without first, without going through me, which is a violation of my intellectual property right. Now, one thing I found interesting is that they're mostly like four main simple steps that are basically labeled on the PIPA website that to ensure to make your intellectual property as secure of your creative works. But one and three that I found very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have four. You have ensure your work is properly marked. That one is not rocket science. Register your work. Also, that's not rocket science. But mostly two and three. Two says if your work is infringed and your claim to copyright, because at this point they are not going to take your word for it. You still have to back it up with relevant evidence and the documentations that have to do with you filing having the intellectual property documents associated to your work. That's obviously one of those evidence you'll have to provide. Now, if your work is infringed and your claim to copyright is disputed, i.e. in plagiarism case, where the other party claims the work is theirs, you may need evidence to prove your claim. Again, they're just not going to say, you know what, actually we believe you.
And there's not going to be an automatic enforcement discussion. And this was one of the things, Helmut, that, to be honest, let me share from the start. So I said during this policy development.
Okay. Discussion.
Okay. The guys in public sector love using the word workshop, but then you find yourself as a journalist there and you're just there observing and you're wondering, is this a workshop? But then you hear it's supposed to develop the policy that has to be implemented by a specific time frame in Namibia. So Namibia's next, Namibia intellectual property policy and strategy. The second one has to be implemented somewhere between now, middle April, and I think June, between these 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the NIPS abbreviation.
Yeah, that's the NIPS abbreviation. Now, the concern here is, Helmut, when they had the
NIPS,
the,
huh?
You see, I knew it. You see, I knew it, Helmut. I knew it. So, okay. It's a good thing. It's not only, you know, 5:10 now. Okay? Yeah. You know, you made good time this time. So the particular thing that we've got going there is a discussion of how and who will enforce what laws we already have.
Yeah.
Now they're interesting laws, and there's a whole bunch of laws, supposed laws, that are still in bill and drafting phase. Now the concern here is, it's a very good point that you showed there about, in many cases, any legal challenges that take place are actually civil challenges. And this is actually, for example, like in the American or the global case where the law exists to give someone accusing another party of copyright or IP theft in one or other way, of doing so, that they should prove a very strong case or present a very strong case when they file or where they start their legal challenge. The concern here is, once again, I get the same conclusion. We don't hear this, we don't hear much about it like in Namibia.
And, I thought of that, and one of the main reasons I could only think of was, this is mostly emphasizing the the creative sector, and this is not just the creative sector as in the entertainment form of entertainment, because this takes you straight to a lot of a lot of things it covers a lot of your works, including design if you're an engineer. Go back to people themselves explaining this, works covered by copyright include novels, poems, plays, referencing works, newspapers, advertisements, computer programs, databases, films, musical composition, choreography. Yeah. That's what, yeah, dance choreography. Moves. Yeah, dance moves. Yeah. You can't just, watch a few videos and then start practicing someone's moves and then start taking credit for them. Again, intellectual property. So you have choreography. You have paintings. You have drawings. You have photographs. You have sculptures, architectures, maps and technical drawings. So everything that requires, that's basically has creativity behind it. Something that you are coming up with that is very unique to, it's the first of its kind in terms of creative works. It's
covered. But you are also allowed to improve on something that someone else has used.
Yeah.
You can improve on that.
Now you're just treading on.
No, you can. It does exist, Helmut. It does exist.
Yeah.
However, it's literally.
And there's the dreaded however.
Do you remember what used to happen in high school?
Yeah.
And on university. When your classmates would come and say, Helmut, can I have your homework? Or can I have your assignment?
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened?
Apart from some guys in my class, ended up copying everything, including my name.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Exactly that part. Because in many cases, they go and copy your work just as is. And you, obviously, because I've been guilty of it. In a scenario where I said, okay, cool. You can look at my homework, not assignments.
Yeah.
Homework. And then the person copied it word for word, my whole story. I wrote an essay for an English, one of the English classes in high school.
Mm-hmm.
We had to write an essay for homework.
See, that's
the thing. Person copies my story as
word for word.
I was like, SJ Dom.
Just how dumb do you think this teacher is? That's one thing I never understood. Just look, edit for the love of God.
Do you know what was the worst part? We were sitting right next to each other.
Oh,
so our books went in together. Now book number one, book number two. I was like, brah, Dom. Do you know what was the second scenario? Then for the Afrikaans lesson, one girl asked for, because we also had to write an Afrikaans essay for homework. And I finished it because we had a free period. I finished it in that free period. And she saw me finish it. And she asked me, Dwight, can I copy your work? I said, no. Because I realized what happened just last week with the English homework.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I'm not going to give it. No, Dwight, give it. I said, no, I'm not going to give it to you. Please think. Why would you copy an essay? This is not the closed-ended questions that you get. You know, you read the essay. Okay, what happened? Who, you know, what was the color of the bird in the essay? Mm-hmm. Then you write red. What was the color of the dog in the essay? Then you write it had spots, black and white. No. Homegirl wanted to copy my essay word for word. I said no. I said no.
You didn't realize that right now there are a lot of people that are making a lot of money from just doing assignments for a lot of tertiary students, and that's something that I never understood actually. From I'm most likely to use AI than trust a total stranger with my schoolwork.
Oh, Hamud, that's not the worst. There have been media outlets here in Namibia who literally printed, because they copied and pasted the whole AI thing with the prompt at the bottom.
Seriously?
Put it on their newspaper paper. And now the journalists are grilling each other on the journalist group. Hey, next time, word of advice, take out your AI prompt.
Wait, they left the prompt?
They left the... They copied the prompt right like that onto the page.
Jeez.
I know. I know.
I think it's safe to say, generally, I would say there is nothing wrong with copying. Now, the thing is, when you are copying, or, you know, whatever it is that you are copying, can you turn it into your own words?
But you're not talking about creativity, ne?
Yeah.
If you take that same sentence you said, Hamid, yeah, and you say, I'm the first newspaper in Namibia.
Yeah.
You opening up the first printing press and having the first newspaper in Namibia, yeah, is nothing novel, because I can go and buy a printing press and I can go and establish my own newspaper.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't use Helmut News, the Helmut Newspaper Incorporated.
Yeah.
And I say my newspaper's name is Dwight Printing Newspaper Incorporated.
Yeah.
It should be two distinct entities.
Yeah.
Or, for example, you've got a dairy farm. You cannot stop me from having also a dairy farm.
Yeah.
There are certain things you cannot limit the rights of another party.
Yeah, no, you can't.
However, if you have a specific way of milking your cattle, I cannot copy that part. Because if you didn't patent it, or you didn't protect it in whatever legal scenario, yeah, meaning you didn't register it.
Yeah.
I can copy it like that.
Yeah.
Because it's open-ended. But if you did register it, the way of milking a cow, mm-hmm, you've got these, you know.
I came up with this idea. I invested a lot of research in it.
It has this technical design. Yeah, exactly. It does this. It provides this comfort mechanism to the cows, so that it's not you there at the mercy of a knee coming from the cow from the right or the left, potentially giving you a concussion. You know what cows do sometimes?
That's my childhood.
If they don't like it, uh-huh, they kick with the hind leg. Uh-huh. The goats also do the same thing. The goats just do it backwards. If you're standing behind the goat, mm-hmm, unlucky you. So, that's a design function that can be patented, can be protected, that can be registered. And how much you should see the things that they submit in the US for patent protection. It looks like a five-year-old's assignment. You know, it's like a basic organogram.
Yeah.
Just outlining functions.
Yeah.
And then the explanation. Basic. Then they take multi-billion dollar companies like Valve to court. And then Valve even says, okay, hey, let's settle out of court. I'll pay you into infinity. I'll buy out your right. So that you don't challenge me again in the court for the same function that you're supposedly, you know, suing me for. But yeah, and what you wanted to say.
It's a good thing you brought up the whole, US discussion. One thing I like about the US is they take a lot of things seriously. The only thing they don't like taking seriously is who occupies the White House. Because right now,
yeah, their game in politics is pretty weak.
It's terrible. I mean, for a country that's dedicated
it's
to transporting,
horrendous.
For a country dedicated to spreading democracy, they are not doing very well.
It's horrendous. Oh, you should apparently see the ambassador of the U.S. ambassador to Namibia, Giordano. He posts these videos of the visits he has gone to see of the mining sites and the oil and exploration activities in Namibia.
The comments?
But you should see, for example, the one that I've got is about an ex post of on X of the embassy, the U.S. embassy in Namibia.
Yeah.
Now, the photo taken makes him look like he's a James Bond / Mission Impossible character.
Yeah.
And we were like, what is this? What's going on here? And the way the whole thing is written by the post is like, yeah, looking at and scoping out the mineral resources. Just there, you're like, please, 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 we're not Iran. Please, we are friendly.
The comments, you know, every time something like that comes up, I just go straight to the comment section.
Please, please.
Now, the thing is, when it comes to, creative ideas. Oh, no, you gotta love the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's some kind of crazy information that came out of the American creativity. Something I never imagined would come from that. The whole idea that at some point, I think their Ministry of Defense, their U.S. military in the early 2000s, I believe, asked the U.S. government for $7.5 million so they can come up with a gay bomb. Now the idea was.
Oh, what?
The idea was,
I know, I've heard about it, but I'm not,
I know.
I'm just laughing because you said it just like that, you know.
No, look, every time I read that story, the comedian part of me keep asking myself, how is that bomb supposed to explode? Like, a bomb? Look, the point is, someone with a straight face sat there, and ask the government for $7.5 million in US dollar with that idea.
Look, they probably had a very good way of seeing how it materializes.
I think that's taking make love, not war, to a whole another level.
If I've ever heard of a worst idea, and today is one of them.
These are a bunch of fully grown men that came up with this and thought it was a good idea, and they needed $7.5 million. And the thing is, I think when you bring this whole discussion home, one of the reasons why I think it's not as explored as it is, take for example in places like the US and basically much of the Western world. And this is actually where I think most of the references that I can use is going to come out of the Western world, because the predominant language is English. So we are more exposed to that information than information of similar nature that we would be exposed to coming out of, take for example, China and Russia. Just throw South Korea and Japan in that basket, because there's not a, they don't use English. So most of the information coming out that would, obviously would be important to discussions like this, it's either in Japanese, or it's Mandarin, or it's in Russian, or it's in Hindi if it's coming out of India. So I think we are left out of a lot of knowledge that we basically explore because it's not in English. But one of the reasons that I can think of here is especially in the creative sector, it's because that's okay. You can find that in the in making music and movies and all that, but in content creation we are still not yet there because of the whole I think monetization discussion. And it's also going to require, I think, a lot of awareness amongst the creatives themselves, because a lot of us will just sit and come up with this masterpiece, of work. And we don't know that before you put it out there, you have to protect it, because just in case, take for example, an establishment like, take for example, Build It, ShopRite, Spa, they want to use it in their advert. You can actually make money out of that. So that means, take music, for example. The way that it's defined, goes beyond you just entertaining a crowd and then making money from the ticket sales and maybe the CD sales, or, you know, your Spotify is Spotify live streams. You can get, now, there are a lot of big brands that could use just a snippet of that sound in their advert, and you could also make money of that. Now, there are not a lot of us that are actually exposed to that. You know, there are not a lot of us that are exposed to that information, let alone how to go about, you know, generating revenue from your song, for example, that's being used in an advert.
Oh, no, the South Africans have a very healthy...
South Africa is light years ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that I think boils down to one, the monetization discussion.
Yeah.
And with the whole, tit for tat gone south with regards to the Starlink, here in Namibia. And he's, Starlink is, owned by yours truly, Elon Musk, who owns, giant platforms like X. I can imagine how tied the whole, monetization discussion is going after whole rejection discussion thing, especially with regards to X. And when you talk about the copyright discussion, intellectual property discussion in Namibia, the lack of knowledge, I would say, especially amongst the creatives themselves, the creatives ourselves, because I'm in that category, both as a creative and also in the lack of exploration or knowledge on how to keep your works secure by making sure that you own the intellectual property of that works.
Yeah.
Yeah. For one, a lot of us don't know how to go about registering these works, but the information is very public. And, they are basically, very simple instructions that you can find on the National Intellectual Property Institution that's yours truly, BIPA, that basically explains how you can go about doing that. It's like registering a business. Especially like registering a business. You don't want someone to come in now. Take, for example, if I start a business today and it's not registered and I give it a name, and I find out 2-3 months down the line that someone is, someone in Namibia, take for example, is using the name that I have on my products. And I go to them and tell them, hey, I came up, you guys just started your business yesterday. Mm. I've been running mine for about 4-5 months. So I've already taken this name. You guys will have to find another name. If the business that I came, excellent, the business has been running for 5 years, but is the name, intellectually protected?
Yeah, is it?
Because if it's not, there's nothing any authority is gonna do about it.
Helmut, you know what is also, it's a good thing you bring up that point. There was a very good, example, because I always love talking about commercial activity, challenges, instances. And sometimes also who sues who for what.
Yeah.
And you always get to, you go into the nitty gritties of what's going on there. So, when my sister used to work in South Africa, specifically at one of the large, distribution companies for, they would supply computer hardware to the sort of like the South African and the rest of Africa markets. Mm-hmm. And so I'm talking about here between, 2005 to 2007. Yeah, they're about. She told me an interesting story about what happened to a guy in South Africa, a small MSME, a small business, a small enterprise. Mm-hmm. This guy, have you ever seen the font, the letters for Intel? Intel's font.
Yeah.
Now, what many people do not know, even in Africa,
yeah,
is that font, the font, mm-hmm, is registered. It's a trademark.
So the whole different, the whole list of different fonts that I find in Microsoft Word.
Okay, let me take a piece of paper. Let's take this Eagle FM logo here.
Yeah.
This whole thing.
The Eagle FM logo that's just on the website.
Yeah. This.
Yeah.
Is a registered trademark. So when my sister told me the story of, while working in the IT industry for in South Africa, in the private commercial space, a guy, a micro enterprise or a small enterprise, went and literally asked a graphic designer to design. He used the same name, Intel, and he designed literally his name exactly the same as the global brand Intel for chips.
Yeah.
And when Intel South Africa, but it was actually Intel France who saw it, because she explained that the engagement was the communication and commercial activity came from France to Southern Africa. When the French marketing office in Paris heard about that, they sent their lawyers after that micro enterprise, and they told them, don't use our logo, don't use our font, change your company name, or else. That's it. Don't use our logo, don't use our name, change your company name, or else.
Lawsuit coming your way.
No, they first give you, because you know what happens in law.
Yeah.
When it comes to civil matters.
Yeah.
You are given an opportunity to correct your action.
Yeah.
You know, the assumption is made you were acting naively.
You didn't know.
Mm-hmm. You were just naive. You saw the name Intel somewhere.
Naive, that's politically correct for an idiot. Okay, anyway, go on.
So, that poor guy had to change everything, change his whole company, everything. And he had like letterheads, he had like business cards on that name. He had to change everything. Why? Because South Africa was a signatory to the statutes under which WIPO supervises, as well as Namibia was also part of some of those statutes. And much of those statutes, those global statutes, are things that factor into the World Trade Organization's operations as well. You should sometimes check, Helmut, on the WTO's website, the legal disputes between countries. That dispute, remember that dispute you spoke of Venezuela and that oil company from?
Yeah, ConocoPhillips.
Yeah. It's there. It's listed there. Because they have the origin country from which the company comes from has to register the case with the WTO, because it forms under that global treaty, the TUT global treaty, GATT and GATS. The one is trade goods or traded goods, and the other one is trade services. The old one is the GATT, GATT. And GATS is the new one that sort of like builds up from that, because now services have become commercial entities, that commercial aspects that can make money.
Yeah.
And it's not just about selling goods, it's now also about selling services.
Yeah.
So, font here in Namibia. Please, Namibians, if you're going to use a font that your graphic designer just miraculously pulls from the internet,
AI,
you must pray to all the gods in the Greek pantheon, all the gods in the ancient Egyptian pantheon, even to gods that don't exist anymore, which even means don't even think of going to a witch doctor.
No.
Pray that the actual legal team of the company that owns the font doesn't see it. Because they will change your, just through a letter, they will change your whole business.
But when you look at it, take for example the South African guy example that you just used.
Yeah.
I think, changing all the design and logo and probably company name along the way, I think he decided to go with that because if you just do the very simple math, the price you have to pay in a dispute with a multinational conglomerate is going to be more expensive than you just...
Close you down in the first court appearance.
Yeah.
That's why the courts actually ask you when it comes to civil disputes, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Make it worth my time. The judge is technically telling you, make it worth my time to listen to two private individuals arguing with each other. Why must I listen to it? Why must I intervene if you guys can't settle this outside? Technically meaning go to the schoolyard and beat each other up at 5 o'clock, you know, after school ends.
Yeah. Because I think, most of the cases, that's one of those things that's not really portrayed a lot in a law, you know, portrayed much in a lot of this whole, lawyer TV shows. Is that most cases are settled out of court.
Yep.
most cases are settled out of court. A lot of cases that show up in court is because, well, they failed to reach unanimous consensus without an intermediary or, like a mediator, like the judge or the magistrate. And I think, actually, when parties to a dispute shows up in a courtroom, they know things are about to get hella expensive.
Well, it's literally like a husband and wife who don't talk to each other anymore situation.
Divorce cases are my favorite.
You can technically also view a divorce case as an IP case, IP or copyright protection case.
What do you have your IP on? Insults?
I don't like the way he leaves the toilet seat up and the court and the judge is like, what? Why are we there? That's for your psychologist, your marriage therapist.
I think that's why the Dissolution of Marriage Act, the newly amended one is based, is not based on proof who's at fault. It's just based on, like, you show up at court right now to get a divorce. They don't want to know who is addicted to, to which gambling habit, which alcohol, or who is addicted to the babysitter or the pool boy. They don't care about any of that.
Addicted to the babysitter?
They don't care about that. All they want to know is, can you fix it? If it's beyond repair, then just sign here and have a good life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they just got tired of listening to a lot of drama.
Arguments that don't make sense or claims that they just don't make sense.
Yeah. So, a lot of us, especially when it comes to the preservation of creative works, because this is something intangible. It's not something physical that you can touch. It's creative works, but it still needs protection.
Yeah.
Because it's of a commercial value. That's one. So that means when this commercial value is derived from these creative works, it's only fair to, for the creator, for the right creators of this commercial valuable, creation to benefit the most.
Yeah.
So, you want to have the right database of basically, this is the individual that created this, and anyone that would like to actually apply this to their work must go through this one. If they give it to you, like Volvo did with the 3-pointer seatbelt of, you can just go ahead and use it for safety.
And do you know that Volvo still makes money just from a seatbelt design?
Yeah.
They still make money, Ahmed. Because all the cars use
the 3-pointers.
The 3-point seatbelt.
Yeah, before, who came up with the 2-point? Because
no, it was an American design.
But boy, that was terrible. I can imagine.
And then they had the one that the race cars use most is the harness one.
Yeah.
It does the cross.
Yeah.
And then
that runs on both shoulders.
Yeah, but it comes, it does like a V,
yeah,
like this. And it has like a buckle thing in the middle.
Yeah.
That's for race cars.
Yeah.
Then you have the other race car one that comes over your shoulder.
Yeah.
It's a, you put it on like two suspenders.
Yeah. They like suspenders.
Like Steve Urkel,
Yeah. Seriously.
You pull on two suspenders like Steve Urkel and then you just fasten them. But this is more unreliable than the harness one and the 3-point. That 3-point can save you.
Mm-hmm.
It has saved a lot of people. However,
that explains why it's pretty standard.
However, there's an interesting fact that I also once heard from Yanis Varoufakis about how many engines are actually made. Helmut, there's patents, intellectual property on everything in a car.
Every nut, every bolt.
Everything to the tire design, everything to the bulbs, everything. And technically, what was it? Yanis said there's something like 8 car companies who are the only manufacturers of engines in the world. Now, this brings things to an interesting point. I spoke about this earlier, the last time we did an intellectual property discussion. Remember when I gave you the example of Honda and Toyota?
Mm.
They actually have the same engine, but Toyota has to use a different sort of like identifiable thing for what kind of engine it is. And Honda has to use a different kind of identifiable letters for their engine. So Honda came up with an engine. I'm just going to use a few terms. So in the 80s, the Japanese championed the four-cylinder cars, and they brought in 16-valve, and they brought in double overhead cam developed or designed cars by engine blocks. Mm. So any mechanic today will tell you those are the like the gold standard engines you want for street racing. If you want an engine in an ordinary sedan car, you want a double overhead cam designed and built engine, which has 16 valve, which is a four cylinder 16 valve technically, automatically, because it generates so much power.
Mm.
And you are racing from robot to robot. You just feel like Schumacher from every robot to stop.
Is that why most of the, classic Japanese cars are very sought after, yeah, and because of how easy they are to sort of like tune from 500 to 1,000 horsepower.
Yep. Now, that was the standard in terms of finding the sportiness for the engine of the time.
Yeah.
Then Honda came up with, they used the double overhead cam. It would say DOHC. On the engine block, you would literally see it.
Yeah.
Usually the engine block would have like a red indicator. And it has those four letters on it. And then Honda brought out the VTEC engines, which were also double overhead cam designed engines. The VTEC stood for variable valve lift technology. It's how the valves in the engine block lift. So that meant it, besides the engine being a double overhead cam designed, it now also had a specific patent design in terms of how the valves operate within the block.
So jeez.
Then Toyota later on came out with the VVTi car.
Mm-hmm.
That was the VVTi sedans and the VVTi Hilux buggies. So I'm talking about here from 2000 heading this way.
Mm-hmm.
This new shape, the shape that you see. Not the old... that round nose Toyotas that existed.
Yeah.
After that. So I'm talking about after the Legend 35. So I'm talking from 2006 heading this way when they brought out the new design for these Hiluxes. A little bit higher, and you know, they had the sharp nose design that came about. With that Bucky, Toyota had to literally use VVTi. They could not say VTEC because Honda has VTEC. But if you go and look at the commercial landscape in Japan, the Japanese are very collaborative, meaning between Japanese corporations,
mm-hmm,
they will support and defend each other in terms of the global stage, in terms of saying, this is Japanese engineering, Japanese entrepreneurial endeavor and stuff like that. And, you know, you will never hear them speak ill of each other. The Japanese companies, in their own market, they technically compete a lot, but they buy a lot of technology from each other. They support each other.
That's some awesome, healthy competition.
In a way, yes. And it's also how they also invest in each other's technology.
Yeah.
Now, the downside is no one technically knew until someone wrote a few interesting articles in drag racing magazines. Toyota has to use the VVTi terminology literally to say it is variable valve lift technology, fuel injection.
Yeah.
However, we can't say VTEC because Honda already has VTEC. And it is whose technology? Honda's. So to also Subaru. Subaru is the only company in the world that has the boxered engine design.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if anyone has ever looked up why Subaru brags about its legendary boxer engine designs, is Subaru shows you, Helmut, the boxer engine design lies like this. Rectangular. But
hence the boxer term.
Yeah, because it supposedly brings balance to how the car maneuvers.
They could have gone with a box. Why boxer?
I don't know, but probably Japanese, how they pronounce it. Because conventional engines stand upright like this.
I'm just saying boxer is an undergarment. Why did they decide to...
So They highlight now. Now Subaru has two engines. They've got the standard boxer, but you pay a lot more to have a car with the boxer engine than just having the regular 2-liter four-cylinder 16-valve turbocharged regular engine that they also build and design. But here's the thing. That regular conventional engine that they can give you an option for, is that a Toyota engine? Because they also had a strategic partnership with Toyota, meaning that they probably had to buy technology from Toyota to use in their cars just to sell it under the Subaru logo in the same economy around the world. Or did they realize building and selling their own engine as a extra option to a consumer also gives the consumer at least two options in terms of saying, hey, listen, here's a boxer engine, but here's also a regular 2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder engine that you can have in your option for whatever you buy. Which highlights primarily how nuanced, how nuanced the world of intellectual property and all those particular. Oh yes, we were also advised we need to start developing laws on trade secrets. Trade secrets also overlaps into the design of a product, which we don't have, Almut.
Now, picture how much we are missing when it comes to these discussions, especially on the African continent. One, the African continent is the most diverse. That means the more diverse cultural and cultures and languages, that means you also have the same level of very extensive diversity in terms of the songs that are sung, the poems that are told, the songs, you have the songs, the poems, the cuisines, all across different cultures and tribes and stuff. We may want to follow the advocates of the tradition, of the Vanuatu traditional understandings.
What, by jumping off that high?
That's one of the things that a lot of them have been advocating, that it must be
protected.
Protected under intellectual property. It's their intellectual property as a community, because for them it was not just an adrenaline rush type of activity. It was a passage right as you pass, as you pass from a boy to a man for some reason. And that's one heck of an initiation.
Hey, at least it's not the Xhosa initiation phase where they paint you white and make you walk around in a blanket in winter.
What?
You didn't know. Imagine sending your son off to an initiation ceremony, and it's literally like sending them off to Vietnam. There's a 50% chance that the boy might come back alive.
I think I talked about different rites of passage last year, and I just looked at Africa and a little bit of South America. I came across some interesting rites of passage, as one grows from a boy to a man. I think if I was born in those eras, the chance of me dying a virgin would have been very high. Because I don't think I would have gone with any of those activities. Take the Maasai, for example. I'm not going lion hunting.
Yeah.
The chances of you being KFC are very high for the lion. Now, but for some reason, these are somewhat cultural activities that were revered back then, but I have to admit there are some who just have to lay back and say, you know what, times are gone. We are not going back to that again, ever. That's why you have a lot of, in a lot of cultures, circumcision is one of those rites of passage. And you can imagine how it was done before the invention of painkiller. Only painkiller I had was...
Today, even the traditional leaders don't want to use painkillers. You should read the stories of what happens to Xhosa boys.
Be a man. That's the only painkiller.
Just be a man after I lobbed off your foreskin. Just keep it in, my boy. Be strong. Be strong. Yeah.
Yeah, nope. Count me out. Look.
On that note, guys, we quickly take a short ad break, a live read break, and we come back right after this. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
This Easter, ShopRite offers great savings on package deals such as any 4 Knorr soup for only 22 Namibian dollars, two packets of Gold Stars instant yeast for $9, 4 packets of 8 Cares sanitary pads for 24 Namibian dollars, and any 2 Nivea body lotions or cream for just $100. Don't dance with death this Easter season. A message from the company that cares, ShopRite. Check us.
Babice University for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences, and this is for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Admission requirements are that the candidate must have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. The candidate must also be a registered nurse or midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia, that is the and the HPCNA. The candidate should also have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility, and the candidate must write a short essay describing motivation for pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year, and the mode of delivery will be full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Vilvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So yeah, Helmut, not to say that initiation processes are intellectual property or anything that can be protected as such.
There's a lot of things that you can actually derive from there that you can sort of like build new ideas on to come up with your only new creative works. Just understand that you cannot patent something that's natural.
Hey, and that includes a plant, cow, an animal.
After you pointed that out, I went and did a little bit of digging in that. Then I found out why there was a lot of drive, into the direction of genetically modified plants, because they knew that you can just take a plant out of nature and then start claiming it's yours.
Continuously happens.
You have to tweak some genes somehow, so that it can be, you can create something, some unique characteristics to it that's not present in nature.
Yeah. And that has happened a lot with like the rose variants, the rose plant and the flower. That has happened with many of the flowering flowers or plants that you find in nature or today. But that has been the issue with the rooibos tea plant.
I read that story.
But the concern was there that it's always an American coming to South Africa. Mm-hmm. They go and take a plant, a literal plant. Then they go and try and patent the plant in the US. Now, the downside is South Africa has it registered as a UNESCO heritage item.
It's a traditional tea, right?
Yeah. And the plant is only indigenous to South Africa. You can't even find it in Namibia. It only grows in South Africa. The plant is registered as a registered trademark. The name of the plant and the plant itself is registered by South Africa.
Yeah.
And any products coming from it must be made in South Africa. So the South Africans were very clever. How much? It's a multi-million US dollar industry in South Africa. The rooibos tea industry, tea making industry, which is bigger than the sale, which is, okay, it's probably on a comparable level with the Ceylon tea. Ceylon tea is Five Roses tea, that black tea.
Yeah.
Not the Chinese black tea that I met recently, because I realize now that the teas we drink are very, very strong.
What do you mean?
Very strong in flavor. They're darker, then you taste the flavor.
Yeah.
But when you drink Chinese teas, and I met the director of the Confucius Center in last month's particular engagement. I met him back in February, where he gave me a whole bunch of Chinese teas to test out. And I was like, but they all have that same, because my palate obviously has been trained on the heavy tea that we drink here in Namibia, which is the Jogo brand, the Five Roses brand. There was another tea brand that I also, 10, or what was its name? It starts with a T. And then it's obviously the red, the rooibos variants, or the rooibos products. My favorite was Mr. Lager, the one with the wagon on it. And I mean, Helmut, I grew up on rooibos tea as a baby. Do you know that you can't give a baby any other tea product, but you can give them rooibos tea. After drinking milk, you can give them rooibos tea.
Not Five Roses.
Why would you give a baby Five Roses?
I have no idea. May as well just give them Coke. Look.
But literally, you know.
Now that you bring up like the strength of the whole tea and the color.
Mm.
Yeah, like ours would be darker. It just brought us something to my mind. I've I've been to a Thai restaurant. And to, Thai, Chinese, for some reason I've come to learn that I just have a thing for Asian, Asian cuisines. Thai, Korean, Chinese.
Mm.
The tea.
We're not going to say anything
else. Yeah. The tea always comes, comes very light looking.
But did you taste how very light it is?
Yeah, it is.
Sometimes.
And in one Korean establishment, it was served with honey. I'm like, geez, you guys are healthy.
Yeah. And in some cases, the premium teas that they, for example, they've got in China, that you literally get a taste, but it obviously they don't use sugar like we sometimes put sugar in our drinks. But it is a particular cultural trademark that you can even see. Packaging, where it is grown, how it is consumed, all that. You know, like the tea drinking ceremonies that much of the Asian countries have. Japan has one from the samurai period. China has one.
Oh, yeah, wabi-sabi. Oh, that's my favorite.
The Koreans have one. The Southeast Asian guys here from Indonesia. And so they've got tea drinking ceremonies, which you can, it's like not an initiation ceremony sometimes. Sometimes it's also a ceremony that's used to, to assess your enemies,
For wabi-sabi, it's an appreciation for anything imperfect. That's my favorite, Japanese aesthetics.
Yeah.
That, it's even a drink in sort of like a cups that are broken up, and then they were basically decided to mend them instead of throwing them away.
So they smashed them and put them back
together. Put them back together to basically, show you that imperfection of life. Not everything is gonna go okie-dokie all the time.
Helmut, that could have been a toddler deciding to go Babe Ruth on the crockery in the house.
It's an appreciation of anything imperfect. Nothing is finished. Nothing is complete.
Do you know what is imperfect?
What's that?
Nah. The difference between Namibia having a drought and Namibia being washed away by excessive rainfall. That is an imperfection.
Oh, yeah, that is.
If you influenced the imperfection, meaning you broke the cup.
No, you're not influencing. You're just appreciating that words. Well, it's going to happen sometimes and you just have to deal with it.
Sometimes I don't understand the Japanese.
Me neither. Look,
I mean, I tried reading Haruki Murakami book. I tried reading, what was the other guy's name? The other Japanese author. And the level of philosophy they go put it. And I was like, why must you make my brain dissect itself upon itself to understand what happened in Hinduism? I'm not there, guys. I come from Southern Africa, I'm in a developing world context. Why are you making my brain dissect on itself just to understand who is Vishnu and who was what Hindu god or Buddhist god? What? Yeah, but anyway, what you were saying.
Now, look, the thing is, apart from the whole, you know, appreciation of imperfection and stuff, that's a very awesome Japanese aesthetics that I just like to read up a lot. But the whole, you know, when you look at the, when you look at the, you know, the diversity of Africa, for example, and using the, like, the rooibos and how the South Africans basically sort of like preemptively put laws in place to make sure that the native plants that are native to South Africa, take for example like the rooibos, is not taken advantage of by some multinational corporations. And some of them have tried, like one Swiss or American. I keep confusing that. They've tried. Now, if South Africa did not have the right legislations, the right documents with regards to the intellectual property of what they have, someone else halfway across the planet would be making money out of something that's native to their country. So, I think when you are looking for something that is associated with creativity, I think the best teacher you can get that from would be nature. If you look, and this is just something coming out of the meme world, by the way, and the creative world. If you look at how a peregrine falcon, now that's the fastest bird on the planet, and that thing goes up to what, like
is the one that looks like a gunshot.
It
does the killing method of a gunshot. But before we continue, Amur, we've got an ad break. So we get back, dear listeners, from that quick break. How much is where you left off?
To wrap it up, for me, if you look at the, every time I look at the intellectual property discussion, especially when it comes to Namibia, it's somewhat, we more often, especially in the creative sector, avoid that discussion. I wouldn't say actually avoid. I would say it's mostly due to lack of knowledge. You have to understand that it's like we don't fully understand just how important the creative works we are producing is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why the need for legal, protection. Yeah. Because if we, and I think that's for the most part, especially in the content creation sector, and basically the whole creative industry, it's coming from, if you ask me, as with regards to Namibia, because the industry, monetary-wise, it's lagging behind other countries like Nigeria and South Africa.
Oh, but greatly.
Yeah, greatly. So, if people were able to, if the industry managed to reach the economic level in terms of revenue generation that you see in South Africa and, in South Africa and Nigeria, a lot of people would just understand how important these works are.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just done as more of a side hustle from my 9 to 8. This is a full-time job.
And sometimes also the scenario of enforcement. Isn't a discussion of throwing the responsibility of enforcement, like having a police officer that you see, on the shoulders of a SOE?
Yeah.
Because in many cases, Hamoud, the SOE will ask, must we really fight on behalf of everyone who has a grievance against someone who supposedly committed an infringement?
Mm-hmm.
Would that not sound a little bit predatory?
Well, I think that's that predatory part of the discussion is where the whole, that's where the reasons behind making it, making people aware of their, to patent their creative works.
Mm.
Because if it's not patented, it's kind of difficult for any law to be on your side if it's not registered.
Yeah.
Like I gave, my business example. I open my business and run, and give it a name and everything and run it for 5 months unregistered. It's doing just fine. And then someone opens up a business and, take the name that I've been using 5 months and they register it and they start using it.
Mm.
If a dispute starts from that, it will be very difficult for me to defend the name of my business because, people will be like, okay, but we don't have you guys in our system. This guy obviously has all the legal documents associated.
There's actually a case like that.
Exactly.
And it happened 2 years ago.
Oh boy.
It was regarding the name of Fly Namibia.
Oh, yeah.
And people could prove it. People said these guys were first.
They registered.
The West Air Group. Yeah. And the other, I think we interviewed the guy who had the grievance here on Eagle FM. He came through. But the discussion is self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Because people literally went and said, we can't do anything because we can only provide proof who registered first with us.
Yes, you may have been running the business for, you know, for 10, 20 years, but...
if you did not register the thing...
we can't help you.
But on that note, guys, this is where we end up on this evening's discussion of the home run. I almost said the business and economic segment. Right after the break, it'll be China Corner. Helmut, until tomorrow. From our side?
Yeah, until tomorrow. And this whole show was not 1 April. This is just regular home run.
Yeah, this was not April Fools. Please, guys. Mm-mm. April Fools can't start like this. On that note, let's see each other again. Same time, same place. Stay tuned for the China Corner after the break.